NPR News, Denver.
Citigroup is being rescued for the third time in 5 months. The government has agreed to exchange up to $25 billion in emergency bailout funding for as much as a 36% equity stake in the company. However, the deal depends on private investors also getting on board. Recapping our top story, President Obama is due to speak within moments at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. Officials say that he's going to unveil a plan that includes a drawdown of American troops in Iraq over the next 18 months, with all combat forces out by the end of August 2010. They say the White House wants to keep a large military presence in Iraq this year to offer extra security during key national elections. As many as 50,000 support troops may remain in Iraq an additional 2 years. I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from LendingTree, where you can choose from up to 4 customized loan offers. 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win. LendingTree.com.
WILL programs are made possible by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra, presenting A Tribute to John Williams on Saturday, February 28th at 7:30 p.m. at Krannert Center. Join the CUSO for an evening of cinema's greatest musical moments. More information is available at 351-9139. Support for programs on WILL comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana. This Saturday's wine tasting will feature a little of this and a little of that, with some French, Italian, American, and Argentine wines in the lineup. Information at 337-7704 or online at thecorkscrew.com.
Good morning. Welcome to hour number 2 of Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. The producers for the program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Henry Frayne, is at the controls. Well, if in the months ahead you're going to be heading out to try to find a new vehicle for yourself and your family, whether we're talking about a car or an SUV or a truck, whether this is going to be a brand new vehicle or something that it's just new to you, and you're still trying to figure out what would work best for you and your family, we may be able to help you out this morning in this part of Focus 580, because we'll be talking about cars, new and used cars, some of the best, some of the worst. Talk perhaps a little bit about strategies to try to get the best kind of a deal. And our guest for the program this morning is Mike Quincy. He is an automotive specialist with the Consumer Reports Auto Test Center. Consumer Reports has just named their top picks for 2009. They have been doing this every year for a long time. You can read about it on their website. You can actually go out to wherever it is you might buy magazines and get a copy of the magazine and see what they think about some of the best cars in different categories, depending on what's important to you. You can look at that and put that all into your collection of data and whatever it is you're doing to try to figure out what kind of car would work well for you. And of course, here we're open to questions, and I know he'd do your best to help you out if you have a specific question about a particular kind of vehicle or how to go about buying a car. I know he'll do his best to help you out. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that is good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. So at any point here, questions are welcome. We just ask people to try to keep their questions brief so we can get in as many folks as possible, but certainly questions are welcome. Just a little bit more about our guest, Mike Quincy. He is responsible for making sure that all the automotive data and information is up to date for Consumer Reports, for ConsumerReports.org, for Consumer Reports Special Publications. He also edits the monthly automotive technical reports for Consumer Reports Premium Auto Content, and also writes content for the Consumer Reports Cars blog. And he's joining us this morning by telephone. Mike Quincy, hello.
Hi, David. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks. And yourself?
I'm doing great.
Well, we really appreciate you giving us some of your time. Maybe just as a way of starting out, one of the things that the magazine does in rating cars then looks at all of the ratings and in particular categories of car. So depending on, you know, do you need a sedan? Do you need a truck? Do you want an SUV? Is the environment the most important thing to you? And then looking at all the cars that fit in that category, saying, okay, according to us, everything we looked at, here's the best one. Are there any cars that for you particularly stand out as cars that are certainly worth recommending?
Well, certainly, as you mentioned before, David, Consumer Reports April issue, the top picks are kind of like the best from the best. These are models in various categories that did exceptionally well in our testing, have at least average or better reliability, and haven't failed any crash tests if they were crash tested by the Insurance Institute or the government. And I have to tell you that there isn't one model listed in our top picks that I wouldn't want parked in my garage, whether it's a pickup truck or a minivan, a family sedan. These models are fabulous, but one that I'll kind of highlight right now, because I just drove it the other night, is the Infiniti G37. This is a marvelous sport four-door sports sedan. It combines luxury, a nice ride, great handling, an incredible 328-horsepower V6 engine, a super smooth 7-speed automatic transmission, and not only is it reliable, it's fun to drive.
Okay, so if you got that kind of money and that's what you're looking for in a car, that you'd say people should
take a look at it.
Take a look at it, and of course, otherwise, we can also talk here about good values in pre-owned vehicles. That's there in the magazine. A lot of different kinds of information there. We have some callers, so I will just get right to them and find out what's on their minds. Starting out with someone in Urbana, here where we are. This is line number one. Hello. Oh no, sorry. I guess that would be Villa Grove. Villa Grove, line number one. We had somebody, some previous Urbana person, but yeah, Villa Grove, go ahead.
Good morning.
Yeah.
I was just calling to ask about what cars you have on your top list for, like, gas mileage. And sure. Then there's the one that I was always wondering about, the Smart for 2 and how good it really is. And I could just listen offline on the air.
Okay, great.
Hey, thanks a lot for your question. A great question, one that we get quite often. The fuel economy champion for Consumer Reports, hands down, is the Toyota Prius. The base model, we got 44 miles per gallon overall, and that's a combined highway and city. It really is a remarkable car because it has honest-to-goodness room for four or five full-size adults, lots of cargo space, top-notch reliability. We're very confident in Consumer Reports reliability data that the components of the hybrid are holding up very well. We love the Prius. Your question about the Smart for 2, however, has a different tone. While we did get 39 miles per gallon overall in our Smart car, we really found that the transmission was bulky, the acceleration was slow, it had a rough ride, it didn't have great agility. It's a tiny car. You can only fit two people. And, you know, while about $15,000, $16,000 isn't a bad value, for about the same amount of money, you can get a Honda Fit, which is far, far superior in every performance category, and you only give up about 5 or 6 miles per gallon overall. So while you make a splash with a Smart for 2, it really isn't a lot of fun to drive.
Yeah. There's certainly the automakers are trying to develop models for people who are really concerned about gas mileage and environmental impact of driving. And the car that you mentioned is the one for you in the green car category that is the top car is the Prius, and it's been that way for several years now, and it's good to hear, or interesting to hear at least, that this car that people were so excited when it was first introduced has indeed over the years now has held up.
We're very confident in the Prius. We really think it has legs, even though it really is at the end of its model year. A new Prius is coming out in 2010, but the current model. Like I said, it's a remarkable packaging job that they did to cram so much room, technical sophistication, green sensibilities into this car for about $23,000-$24,000, and we're very, very, very impressed with it. And but as you mentioned before, David, I mean, that people are concerned about fuel economy and pricing and things like that. I really don't think that the price of gas is going to stay as low as it is right now forever. I mean, you really had to be kidding yourself. So. Stocking up on a fuel-efficient car right now when the prices are relatively affordable is probably not a bad idea.
Yeah. And among gas-electric hybrids, you're saying that as far as you're concerned, as far as in the judgment of Consumer Reports, the Prius it stands out as the best.
Consumer Reports gives two thumbs up to the Prius.
All right. We have another caller here. This is someone in Champaign, and line number two. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I've been interested in getting a Honda Element, and I guess my question is, it kind of goes for any car. I've never bought a new car, and I'm trying to decide if it's worthwhile to be buying the new Honda Element versus one that might be 3 or 4 years old, if they've made a lot of improvements to it, and just in general, what you think of the Honda Element.
Well, the Honda Element is just kind of so-so. I hate to say to burst your bubble, but it just didn't quite score well enough in our testing to get a recommended check mark. It does, however, have a lot of utility. Our model got 21 miles per gallon overall, which is pretty good for its class of kind of a small SUV. But the best news about the Element is its reliability. It has an excellent reliability history according to Consumer Reports reliability surveys. And the survey that we have in the April issue of Consumer Reports is culminated from 1.4 million vehicles. So it's a very, very comprehensive survey. I have a lot of confidence in the Element's reliability record. I mean, it's really aces across the board, the data that we have going back to 2003 to 2008 used for a used car. The Element is not a big, risky used car. It is holding up very, very well.
Okay, so, yeah, because I could spend half as much on an Element with, 60,000 miles on it than I could for buying a new one.
You'd save a lot of money.
It's the utility of the vehicle that I'm really after. It has a fit for what I want. So,
no, I think it's a great small car. It has terrific cargo space, has a nice quick turning circle, has good crash test results, and again, the reliability is just five star across the board.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, other questions are certainly welcome. This morning we're talking with Mike Quincy. He is automotive specialist with the Consumer Reports Auto Test Center. And Consumer Reports just out with their recommendations, their car issue for 2009. You can look on the website. You can get the magazine. They have recommendations for both new and used cars in different categories. So particularly if you're looking for a particular kind of vehicle, they'll tell you which they think is the best. And there's also other information there on how to get the best deal when you buy your car, how to get your money's worth when you go and have maintenance done on the car. So any and all of that is certainly welcome. And I know our guest would do his best to give you an answer if you're interested in a particular car, or maybe you say, well, this is what I'm looking for, and what do you think would fit that well? He'll tell you what he thinks. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We got a call. Someone just didn't want to ask this on air, but I'll ask the question and see what you think. Here we have someone who says they are planning on doing a lot of traveling starting in the year 2011, and what they're looking for is a minivan that would hold 3 or 4 passengers, have a good amount of cargo space, and this person says they're expecting to put a lot of miles on this, so their question, I guess, is should they be thinking about or maybe even holding out for a hybrid or just go for a conventional gasoline-powered vehicle?
Great question. Right now, there aren't any hybrid minivans on the market. Whether or not that changes over the next couple years, I'm not sure. Some of the automakers have been kind of cagey discussing their future hybrid plans. But in the meantime, we are very big fans of the Toyota Sienna and the Honda Odyssey minivans. These have good reliability records, about 19 miles per gallon overall, which is the best in the segment. And they're very comfortable. They're easy to drive. They have great visibility. And another one that is a bit smaller and a bit more affordable is the Mazda 5. And this is a small four-cylinder. It's not quite a wagon. It's not quite a minivan. It's kind of in between sizes. But it's very lively to drive. It has nice agility, has a good reliability record, about 23 miles per gallon overall. We really like the Mazda 5. And think it can be a nice alternative if you don't need something that big. But if you're hauling a bunch of people and a bunch of cargo, I think a minivan is definitely the way to go.
All right. Well, again, hope that helps. Just as a general question, we were talking a little bit earlier about the Prius and the fact that there has been a lot of interest in this vehicle, that generally people are interested in gas-electric hybrids, both for environmental impact, for gas mileage. And as you said, now the price of gasoline is a little bit lower, but it's not going to stay that way. You know, given the interest in these kinds of cars and particularly the popularity of the Prius, we know a lot of manufacturers are going in this direction. They're either working on or have introduced gas-electric hybrids. Are we going to see a lot more, do you think, of these vehicles in the years to come?
I think so. I think that the manufacturers basically, let's say, that didn't embrace the hybrid technology 8-9 years ago are really coming around to it. They're not scoffing at it anymore. They're not laughing at it anymore. General Motors has a hybrid system for their Malibu. The next Ford Fusion, which should be out any time now, has raised the bar as far as hybrids go. Consumer Reports has not tested the new Fusion hybrid yet, but from what I've read, it's doing really well. I think this technology is really quite impressive for the short run. I'm not sure what the long run is in terms of the transportation needs for this country, in terms of in the next 10, 20 years, are we going to see more hybrids? Are we going to see more electric cars? Are we going to see the fuel cell vehicles? It's probably going to be some combination of all the above. But right now, for the next couple years, I still would bank on hybrids. Again, they're holding up well in Consumer Reports reliability surveys, and they're producing generally pretty impressive fuel economy.
Yeah, I know that certainly there are a lot of people who feel that there would be an important niche that an all-electric car could fill, particularly for I think for people who are doing city driving and who don't have to go at highway speeds, and their trips they're going to take are relatively short. You know, the problem now with electric cars, I'm not sure so much speed is the issue, but how many miles you can go before you have to charge, and then how long it takes to charge makes it kind of, the idea of driving an electric car cross country makes it kind of problematic.
Oh, yeah, great. Yeah, that's an understatement, David.
You need a really long cord.
I need an extension cord that's about 50 miles.
Exactly.
Long.
but though I think that And right now, the cars that are available, they're very expensive. So the challenge of building a model that is practical, that is affordable, that's a big hurdle. But given, you know, having said that, what do you and you all there at Consumer Reports think is the potential for a true all-electric car?
I think the potential is there. I think the stumbling block right now is probably about twofold. One is battery technology. You'll find that there are the two of the biggest liars in the world are generally politicians and battery engineers, because they have huge estimations of how much capacity their batteries have and how they're getting smaller and lighter. But there's talk and then there's action. I think they're making great strides. I think in the next couple of years you're going to see battery technology do huge leapfrogs over what it is. But there's a downside to every approach. One of the downsides, and you mentioned it, you don't have long range driving in an electric vehicle. There's some talk about gas stations having kind of a pull up station where a mechanic can quickly take an old battery pack out and slap a new one in, and you're on your way. That infrastructure, it really hasn't been built yet. And again, that kind of take an old one, like your old, you know, battery powered flashlight, you can change those batteries in a snap. They haven't been able to get that for cars yet. The other downside of electric vehicles is, where are you getting your electricity? Mm. If you're getting your electricity from a coal-fired power plant, you're really not necessarily doing the environment any favors. If you're getting your electricity from cleaner sources, whether it's hydroelectricity, solar, wind, or whatnot, then that's a different ball game. But and the other, actually, the last thing is they still haven't solved the recyclability of batteries. So that, you know, that's another hurdle that you have to get over. So there's not a silver bullet here. There's a downside to internal combustion engines. There's the downsides to diesels, to hybrids, to electrics, and to fuel cells. You're gonna have to have a sacrifice somewhere.
All right. We have a number of callers. We'll get right back to them, starting with Belgium, and that's line four. Hello.
Good morning. You have just touched on the conversation I'd like to have with you, and that is with the fuel cells. It seems that the fuel cell would add so much advantage to us, and not only if we can improve the technology that we could sell to other people and once again become leaders in this world of technology, we could also save the climate. We can also jumpstart whole new industries that would be very, very positive for this time of ours. You kind of glossed over them a little bit. I know there's lots of problems with them, but there are countries that or areas that are using them, and they are viable in these areas. Can you go on with that at all?
I think you're right. I think what fuel cell technology was definitely a buzzword in all of the auto shows that I've attended over the last 4 or 5 years. However, there's still that stumbling block of the infrastructure. We don't have corner gas stations that are equipped to juice up your fuel cell car quite yet. In some cases, is it the chicken or the egg scenario? The auto companies say, well, we're not going to build the fuel cells until there's an infrastructure, and people say, well, we're not going to build a fuel structure until there's vehicles. So, but you bring up a great point. I think there's a lot of potential here, but they haven't quite got all the ducks in a row yet.
In Iceland, I think it is, and in also some Scandinavian countries, they are putting these small kiosks where you can pick up hydrogen. It's generated on site. We can get away from the fossil fuel. There's so many aspects of it that seemed there's somebody dragging their feet on it now, though. It seems like there's a reluctance to move on it.
I guess probably I have as many questions as you do. Why is there a reluctance to do this? Is this, you know, if you believe in conspiracies, is it big oil trying to keep it down? But again, how do you generate the electricity to make the hydrogen? That's also another question. Again, how green are you? Are you just having a longer tailpipe?
Well, here again, it could be done from your rooftop with solar if you really want to. That will limit the amount of hydrogen you produce. I understand that, but we can be as green as you want to be.
The potential is there.
And
now is time for an intelligent, hardworking entrepreneur to step up and say, I can solve this problem.
All right. Well, we'll go on here. Another caller. This is someone in Champaign in line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
This will require a crystal ball, but my husband has a little Chevy S10 standard bed, and he's kind of looking down the line to replace it in a year or two. And he's looking for something similar with maybe a little bit better efficiency. The one he has isn't bad, but what he's seeing on the market are these little, he wants a standard bed at least, these little short bed pickup trucks. And is there any pickup trucks coming on the market, small quarter ton or something like that, that looks, you know, like it could be a good purchase?
Sure. Consumer Reports will recommend the Toyota Tacoma. I think that's a good size pickup truck. It's not as big as the half tons like a Ford F-150 or Chevy Silverado.
Right.
It has an excellent reliability record according to Consumer Reports surveys. Did well in our tests. It's a really tough truck. You can get various bed sizes, whether it's a long bed or a shorter bed if you want a quad cab. Tacoma has got a great reputation. Toyota's been building small pickup trucks for a long, long time. I think they do a good job with it. We're in the midst right now of testing a Ford Ranger, which is a much older design. It hasn't been redesigned in a long time, but we need to refresh our tests. You check back with Consumer Reports in a couple months. We'll have some reports on that. But right now, I'd say for a smaller pickup truck, I would definitely look at the Tacoma, or if you need a little less bed space, I would consider the Honda Ridgeline, which is also a nice, smooth-riding truck, though not quite as utility-minded as the Tacoma.
Well, that Tacoma sounds real good, and I'll let him know what you had to say.
Thanks very much.
All right,
thank you.
And again, we'll go next to a caller, and this would be somebody in Mahomet, and line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm driving a Chrysler product right now, a big old minivan that's almost 15 years old, and I've got to buy a new car or a used car soon, and I don't think electricity is green in this area. And I'm thinking about flex fuel, but I'm not hearing you talk about that. Is that still going to be around, like the 85% mix?
Yes, I think in the short run it probably will. The problem with flex fuel or the E85, the ethanol as they're often referred to, is they are problematic when it comes to transportation because they're a very corrosive fuel, and not all stations can handle it. I think it is going to be more of a regional situation in the near future, where the ethanol will be they'll grow the corn, and they'll produce the fuel as a more regional basis. I mean, I live out here on the East Coast, and we can't find ethanol anywhere. They can't find it on the West Coast either. It's more of a Midwest kind of fuel, which is fine. I mean, maybe the future of transportation in the United States will be more regional. So the Midwest will be fueled more by crop products than just straight petroleum. But in Consumer Reports test, the ethanol vehicles that we've run have reduced fuel efficiency. They don't get as many miles per gallon as regular straight gasoline. So again, there's a downside to everything.
Thank you.
What does that does that get at your question? Well, okay, I hope so. But that at least though that from what you're saying is if you live somewhere where you can get the fuel, then the vehicles are there if that's what you want. The only question is, are you actually going to be able to buy E85? Here where we live in the state of Illinois, all the gasoline has 10% ethanol.
Right, right.
But the question is, if you want to go the other way, is there a station near you where you can roll up and you can buy the E85?
You know, the E85 got a really big hype a few years ago, and people thought, oh, that's gonna solve all the problems. But it really doesn't, because they did a little bit more research and found that it takes a fair amount of petroleum to harvest the E85 to begin with. So I don't think it is the answer that people maybe hoped it was going to be a few years ago.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll keep on here, and next we'll talk with someone in Seneca, line number 3. Hello.
Yeah. Good topic. My family owns a jobber. And they deal with oil, petroleum products, and I want to talk a little bit about what you're talking about, the infrastructure. It's totally impossible right now for anybody to expect some of these people, like my brother, for instance. He owns this business where he sells gasoline, and he's out in California. And what it is you'd have to have such a big service station for people to come in. Because you'd have several different kinds of automobiles coming in there, plug in, it wouldn't be worth the money. So until somebody really comes out with one product that may do, I'd say, the majority of the green situation, it's never going to happen. Right now I know people that have electric cars, and I mean, if I owned a business where these people would stop, pull in, and plug their cars in, I would be charged with electricity, because obviously that's you're adding to the problem again. You know, you're talking about carbon plants, you're talking about these carbon plants. Well, you're kind of defeating the purpose when you get more electric cars on the block. That doesn't, you know, that's just taking up more electricity. Then you're putting that on the grid, and I can just see what summertime is going to be like.
Yep, you're right. I mean, there's a downside to everything. I think you've hit on all those points.
The same thing with battery bank, and you brought this up. It's going to be the cost. See, I'm looking at something 4, 5, 6 years down the road. I mean, I would love to have a battery-operated car, but I'm not going to spend $5,000 to replace batteries, because people right now complain about their cars in, 6 to 10 years. You know, it costs so much money to replace a broken mirror or a broken wheel or something, you know, that they're not going to want to replace. They're going to go to another car or something else. You know, it's got to come down in cost. And, you know, I still think you're going to have a combination of gasoline-driven and electric car for at least a while, because we haven't gotten the solar panels down big enough. Those solar panels are the key. You need to get them smaller. At the same time, keep the amount of energy, right? I mean, that's where the key is, I think.
It seems like we should be harvesting all the energy from the sun, and we wonder why I haven't started it before.
But I just don't understand. Everybody wants to get the plug-in type thing. The other thing is too time-consuming. I mean, the average car, when you plug it in, according to what I'm reading on it, and it takes up to an hour, sometimes 3 hours, to charge. So, I mean, if you're driving along... And I know my wife, she says she's going out for an hour driving around, and it ends up being 3 hours, you know, shopping and whatnot. You use like 100 miles up before long, and that right there is the time consumption. and then you're back to plugging your car in somewhere and waiting an hour. So there's got to be a combination of a bunch of stuff. It can't just be one, because right now we haven't perfected any of them.
I think you're right.
And I think that for that reason, I think that some people are saying that maybe something an intermediate, something between the gas electric hybrid like the Prius that we have and something that would be an all electric car would be the plug-in hybrid. So that what you could do is you drive around during the day, and then when you get home at night, you plug the car in.
Yeah, again, but like this gentleman was saying, though, the electric grid in the United States right now is pretty shaky as it is. Can you imagine 5 or 6 million people plugging in their cars every night?
Right. And your point and his point, and everybody would make this point, it drives up the demand for electricity hugely. It stresses the system. And then the bottom line question is, okay, how are you going to produce all that electricity, and is it possible to produce that in a green way that doesn't make it even worse, environmentally speaking, than if we were driving an internal combustion engine.
And from a time efficiency standpoint, it takes you maybe 5, 6, 7 minutes to fuel up your car with gasoline. It might take you 6 to 8 hours to completely charge up your electric car. So, that's another consideration. I mean, I think you touched on it before, David, when you said that a lot of people, I think the statistics are most people drive between 20 and 40 miles in their commute, and an electric car with about 100-mile range would do quite well in that situation. Certainly in a city environment where there's a lot of stop and go, you don't have idling engines. It kind of touches on what we said before about E85. Maybe in the future, the East Coast and inner cities will have a lot of electric vehicles. In the Midwest, they'll be powered by more crop and corn-based products. Maybe on the West Coast, you'll have more vehicles that are powered by hydroelectricity, since there's a lot of water energy being accumulated. So it, depending on where you live, will be the kind of fuel you have.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Mike Quincy. He's an automotive specialist with Consumer Reports. He works at their auto test center and is responsible for making sure that all of the data and information is up to date for Consumer Reports, consumerreports.org, Consumer Reports special publications. And if you're thinking about buying some kind of new vehicle, whether brand new or new to you, and you're looking for some advice, you might look at Consumer Reports. The April issue is out now. For a long time, that's been their auto issue where they rate new cars. You can also get that same information online. So you can use that as part of your research where you're thinking about what you might want to buy. And if you have questions here, you can call in 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. Our next caller is in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Is the Prius you mentioned, is that a hybrid or the standard gas engine?
It's a hybrid. It's a combined gas and electric engine. It's not a plug-in. You don't have to have an extension cord in your garage running out to your driveway to plug it in. It's run by a gas engine, and they use regenerative braking to recharge the batteries when you're coasting.
What,
for example,
what test cycle did you use to come up with that the mile per gallon figure?
We have a 150 mile trip that we take the cars on. It's a combined highway and city country road kind of driving,
mm-hmm.
And it's an overall figure. It's what most people will see on average with the model. You certainly can get higher if you drive a hybrid a certain way. Some people, are very delicate with the fuel, and they try real hard not to press on the gas so they can run the electric motor as far as possible. However, Consumer Reports, we have to test all the cars the same way so they're on a level playing field. We can't drive a truck differently. We can't drive a hybrid differently. We have to drive them all the same. Now, so I've gotten hundreds of letters from people saying that they get better fuel economy. They probably do, but again, it takes a certain technique to get that extra mile per gallon.
Yeah, what I was getting at is if you were to take two Prius that are otherwise one hybrid and one with a standard engine, and then run them, say, from here to Chicago is 120 miles, 65 miles an hour, steady 65 miles an hour. If I'm not mistaken, the one with the conventional gas engine for that chunk of the trip will get better fuel mileage because it's once you get out of the niche that hybrid vehicles work best in, which is stop-and-go city driving, the hybrid part is the regenerative braking apparatus and the batteries and so forth are just so much dead weight. They don't actually put any power to the wheels at all. You know, at steady highway speed. Would you say it's a reasonably accurate statement?
That is kind of, I would say, the common perception. But we actually found that our hybrid models that we've tested have not blown us away with their city fuel economy. They've actually done quite well on the highway. When you look at something like the Honda Civic Hybrid, I mean, that's probably a fair comparison between my, because the Prius, the Toyota Prius, doesn't come in a gas-only model. Prius is only hybrid, but the Civic is available in a regular fuel version as well as a hybrid. And the Civic Hybrid that we tested got 47 miles per gallon on the highway, and the non-Civic Hybrid actually got 40 miles per gallon on the highway. So what you've got is during a light load, even on the highway, a hybrid model can shut down its gas engine entirely and run solely on electric because, as you probably know, it doesn't take a lot of energy to keep the momentum going on a car if you're on a level road.
Laws of physics here, and fuel consumed to perform a task, in this case, moving a vehicle through space, is weight versus and aerodynamic drag, basically, and at a steady speed and rolling resistance, some dynamics. And one of the reasons why there's a certain amount of smoke and mirrors in all this, I think, or at least people should pay attention to, as an example, with the question of E85. The problem with E85 is that on a per-pound basis, it has considerably less energy than gasoline does, and of course of the liquid fuels that you could use in an internal combustion engine, diesel fuel, number 2 diesel fuel, is the one that's most readily available. It's more expensive than gasoline, but it has a higher energy content, therefore you get more for the same weight of fuel load. You get greater distance and so on and so forth.
You're right on the money. One
of the problems I have, I think, is ethanol and any kind of grain-based fuel supply in the future is really not worth talking about, is the fact that when you really figure out the energy inputs, especially using annuals like corn and things like that, if you could make ethanol or some fuel out of some perennial, especially on, say, marginal land, things like that, you might get a gain, but the net energy gain out of a gallon of ethanol is really pretty low compared to the inputs, and I don't think really worth it going in. Do you know of anyone that makes an all-electric car? Because I have a little niche, or my little niche is I seldom drive more than 20 miles at a time, and really seldom more than 10 miles at a time, and have a perfectly wonderful 99 Ford Taurus that serves me well and is quite adequate, but I oftentimes don't drive it far enough to get it up to operating temperature and just to go to the grocery store and run around town. And I would love to have something the size of a smart car, small, light, so on and so forth, all the basic creature comforts like air conditioning and so forth, that was just all electric and I could plug in. That would be just, if for nothing else, the maintenance savings, not having the internal combustion engine and so forth. Do you see anything like that coming along in the horizon of an all-electric, in-town only, basically, or short commute,
Sure.
I think basically what I think is in the future, we as Americans are going to have to look at our vehicles in a specific sort of application. Like, I have this vehicle that serves my needs 90% of the time, and then in that 10% of the time when it doesn't, then I go rent one. You'll rent what I, like, if I want to make a road trip from here to California, well, naturally I don't want an all-electric car. But you can rent cars for not much money per day. And on that one occasion where I need this, then I rent the thing.
You've said exactly what my boss has said. You might have one vehicle to just kind of get you around town or maybe to work, and if you need something more, you might go and rent it. I think there's definitely something to that. Right now, though, to answer your question, can you buy an all-electric vehicle? There are two relatively mainstream models. Well, I don't know if mainstream is the right word, but there's a company called Fisker and another company called Tesla. And if you're sitting down, they'll only cost you about $100,000. So if you want to be green, you want to be the first on your block to have an electric car, you better bring truckloads of money, because that's the only thing they've got right now. I think in the future, the price will come down, the availability will get better, we'll have more information on reliability and how they're holding up. And as you mentioned before, quite eloquently, may I add, you have to look at the energy that you're getting and the amount that you're putting in and what you're paying for. I think it's a very good kind of comprehensive formula that people have to think about.
Well, just I got other callers. I promise to get right to them. Just on the question of the price of those vehicles, is that simply that it's a volume sort of issue, and that if you got to the point where you were making as many of those as you were of Priuses or Mazdas or Honda Accords or whatever, that they wouldn't cost that much money?
I mean, I'm not an economist, David, but I would think that the more that you made, that you spread the investment of the price over time. And right now, the Tesla and the Fisker, they're very sophisticated, luxurious, and kind of almost look like sports cars. And again, these are people that are you know, arriving on the red carpet in Hollywood and have crazy money.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't a mainstream model for people like you and me that work for nonprofit organizations.
All right. Let's go to Champaign County next. Line 2 right here. Hello.
Hi, this is probably fanciful, but is anybody talking about a diesel hybrid?
I've heard people talk about it, and I think they're kind of a neat idea. The problem is that as the gentleman before mentioned, the weight of the batteries kind of, you know, makes the car heavier. One of the biggest things that you have to overcome to get good fuel economy is to try to keep your car lighter. Diesel engines tend to be heavy also, but when you think about it, the beauty of a diesel is it runs so efficiently and smoothly on the highway. It doesn't really take much energy to keep a diesel vehicle running, you know, just cruising down the highway. And in a stop-and-go environment, well, that's the beauty of the hybrid. I think it's a great idea. I would love to see one, but we don't have one right now. Right now, the prohibitive issue is cost, because the price of diesel fuel, as we mentioned before, is a lot higher than just regular gas. Which is too bad, because I'm looking out of my window right now at the Volkswagen Jetta turbo diesel that I drove last night, and it's a really wonderful driving car and fabulous on the highway. But if you were able to turn off the gas engine in the city driving and use the electric hybrid, well, that would make perfect sense.
Yeah, one other thing that comes to mind with it is that it would allow you to use the electric part of the drivetrain to sort of rev the diesel engine, bring it up to temperature, because most of the inefficiency with the diesel comes in, and byproducts, particulates, et cetera, happen when it's not operating at temperature. So if you'd use the electric part of the drivetrain to make it run hotter sooner, you'd be gaining a lot in that, it seems.
You know, I think they have the smartest radio listeners out here in your neck of the woods. I you're right. I mean, what can I tell you? You're right on the money.
Okay. Well, I think the car, it seems that at one point that a lot of people thought, well, really the way to go would be to have more diesel vehicles. And, of course, at that one point, I think it was much more common in Europe for people to be driving diesel vehicles. And then something happened, and I don't know if it was the big increase in demand for diesel or increase overall in demand for gasoline or something, that suddenly diesel fuel got very expensive.
Yes,
and it wasn't before.
And I'm not sure why. I don't think I've ever heard a really reasonable explanation of why diesel fuel is more expensive. But you mentioned the popularity in Europe. Well, in Europe, it's a lot cheaper. I think you even get tax credits for driving diesel cars.
All right. Another caller here, Potomac, line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm interested in replacing an old Ford pickup truck, which is a 250 diesel. Is that minus an 84? Model, and I'm just losing a little faith in its reliability.
And sure.
So I need to pull a trailer.
Okay.
10,000 pounds.
We've actually tested the heavy duty diesel, turbo diesel pickup trucks, the Chevy Silverado 2500, the Dodge Ram, and the Ford F-250. And, you know, we found that, unfortunately, none of these models have very good reliability. They're all below average, according to Consumer Reports surveys. But, boy, they can tow and haul a lot. These machines probably, I don't want to say they're overbuilt, but my guess is that a lot of people that buy pickup trucks, they don't come close to utilizing the capacities that are designed into these things. Mm-hmm. I'm a big pickup truck fan, and so you're not going to hear me bashing pickup trucks, but these models are very expensive. I mean, the ones that we tested were pushing $50,000,
mm-hmm.
and again, they don't have a great reliability history. So I would try to look first at some of the gas models, the 150s or the 1500s, see if they have enough towing capacity to pull the trailer that you've got, and because you'll probably get just about equal fuel economy,
mm-hmm.
Maybe a little bit less with a gas engine than the diesel. And according to Consumer Reports surveys, the gas engines are turning out to be more reliable.
Yeah, I've been more attracted now to the F-150s, and I just had, you know, I'm not sure if they have the capacity to pull a big trailer like that, but maybe they do.
I would check it out. Go to the Ford website or stop by your Ford dealer. Consumer Reports recently tested the redesigned F-150, only scored 1 point below the top-rated Chevrolet Avalanche. We like the F-150. It's a big, solid truck,
mm-hmm.
good bed size, excellent brakes, good rear seat, good crash test results. And our model that had the 5.4-liter V8 engine got about 14 miles per gallon overall.
Is that the big engine?
That I believe, is the biggest gas engine you can get, is the 5.4 in the Ford.
Okay. All righty. Thank you.
All right. Very good. And we'll take next another caller in Terre Haute, line number 4. Hello.
Hello. With regard to the batteries in a hybrid and all-electric, what's the life expectancy and what is the cost of replacing them?
Great question. What we are told from the manufacturers are that the batteries are designed to last, and I put my air quotes up here, the lifetime of the vehicle. Now, what that means exactly, I'm not quite sure, but we're finding that the data from Consumer Reports subscribers is that the batteries are holding up well, and we have data going back to the earliest days of these hybrids. The cost to replace them can vary. I would definitely check in with the car dealer. Go to Honda, go to Toyota, and ask these questions and really press them for an answer. Right now, we don't have any data showing that they're failing, but I think you have a fair question of if they fail, what can I do about it?
And you don't have a cost estimate for replacement?
I don't, right off the top of my head, I don't. I think with a little bit of time, I could do some research, or I can use my hands free right now and go to the Toyota media website and see if I can get a quick answer for you. Let's see. What do I got here? I've got a Highlander here. I've got a hybrid. Let me do a little research. If you hang on the line, maybe you call back later. Maybe I can get it in. But I would get it straight from the dealer's mouth and not some talking head from Consumer Reports.
or is there a different battery technology that you're aware of that one is better than another?
Whatever is small, light, and has can hold a big charge. That's what you're looking for.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. And I'm sure that maybe some people were frustrated. They got really excited about the idea of buying a Prius and thought, well, it'd be okay. I could buy a used Prius, a pre-owned Prius, and they bought it. And then right away, they immediately had to rush out and spend several thousand dollars to replace the batteries. I mean, that's sort of the story one has heard.
Now, yeah, but our data doesn't back that up.
Uh-huh.
We don't have story after story of people saying they're having all these problems with their hybrids, and we have data for the Prius. Let's see, going back to 2003, 2004 was when it was redesigned in the current model, and we don't see any problems of electrical or system failures, except for the 2003 model. But the 2004 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8, they're all looking very strong. And we also have data going back to the same number of years for the Honda Civic Hybrid. And, again, we've got we don't have big red flags for electrical system failures.
All right. We'll go at least to one more, maybe a couple more. Paris, Illinois is next. Line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
What can you tell me about a Nissan Altima? I'm looking at one that's used with low mileage.
Love the Nissan Altima. The Nissan Altima is one of the top used car buys in the April issue of Consumer Reports. The Altima has an excellent reliability history, whether it's the four-cylinder or the V6 model. I mean, I'm looking at the data right now. There isn't a dog year among them between 2008 and 2003. Find a good one. Get it checked out by an honest mechanic. Make sure it doesn't have a title that's been trashed and then brought back to life mysteriously. But the Altima is a great used car buy.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Very good. Let's try Urbana line two. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
When you were talking about the $100,000 electric car, does anybody know, because I know they were all leased, that the car, and I can't think the name of it, that was the subject of who killed the electric car?
Oh, the Chevrolet EV1.
Yeah. Was that in that kind of price range?
No, that was much cheaper, and it was a lease. Yeah, you're right. It was a lease-only kind of deal. I don't know, Dave, if you've seen that movie, Who Killed the Electrical Car?
I've heard of it, but no, I have not seen it.
It's great if you love conspiracy theories. I'm sure there's some truth to it, and some stuff maybe they took some liberties, but it was kind of a sad story for General Motors that got all this great buzz about people leasing this electric car, and they loved it, and they didn't want to give it up, but they made people turn them in, and then General Motors allegedly crushed them all, and it was too bad because if they had stuck with that technology, because one of my colleagues used to work for General Motors, and he said they were way ahead of everybody else with this battery technology.
Was that about 1999 or 2000?
Exactly.
Yeah.
About that time.
And tell me the name again.
The EV1.
EV1.
And I think if General Motors, gosh, if they stuck with that up to now, they would still be way ahead of everybody
else.
That
particular car.
People loved it.
It held the charge. So the idea that they don't have the technology is just plain untrue. If they had it in 2000.
They had it then, but they didn't build on it. In other words, there are other manufacturers and suppliers and engineers who have surpassed what the EV used to do. When you have an automotive technology, you build on it. You make it better over the years. And I mean, there was a time when, for example, a Chevrolet Corvette would maybe get 10 miles to the gallon. Right now, you can buy a Corvette with almost 500 horsepower that gets 25 miles to the gallon. They built on the technology. They made it better. And if General Motors had stuck with it, they'd probably be way ahead of electric vehicle production right now.
We're going to have to stop. I'm sorry, we got one more caller we can't take. If you're interested, you can, of course, go look for the April edition of Consumer Reports magazine and get their picks for the best cars of 2009. You can also see that online. I'm just a real quick question here, Mike. I'm just curious, as you're somebody who drives all kinds of cars, if I said to you, okay, you can have any car you want, price, no object, your dream car, what would it be?
Well, for a new car, I have to say, I am totally in love with the Chevrolet Corvette. I have to also admit that the Corvette has not done well in Consumer Reports reliability surveys, but I love to drive it. I think it's an amazing car, incredible performance for the price. It's fun. It looks good. It sounds good. It's something I've always wanted. I'm a big fan of the Corvette, and if General Motors just got the reliability at least up to average, it would be recommended by us. But I think there isn't a more fun car for me on the planet than the Corvette.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Mike.
Thanks, David.
Mike Quincy, he's automotive specialist with Consumer Reports Auto Test Center. The program here, Focus 580, supported in part by Bodywork Associates, offering professional licensed massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982, now with four area locations, including inside the new Activities and Recreation Center north of Memorial Stadium on the U of I campus. More information at Bodywork Associates.com. com. That's it for us. Up next, the Afternoon Magazine, the host, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you very much, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, we'll talk with Siddharth Khara. He serves on the board of directors of Free the Slaves, and he is the author of Sex Trafficking Inside the Business of Modern Slavery. We'll talk with him following the 1 o'clock news. Let's take a look at commodity prices in Kansas City. The March wheat contract is trading at 552 and a quarter, down 2. May, 559 and a quarter, down 2 and 3 quarters. March wheat in Chicago, 509 and a half, down 4 and a half. May, 524, down 1. March corn, 355, down 7. May, 363 and a half, down 7. July, 373, down 7 and a quarter. September, 383, down 6 and a half. March soybeans, 871 and a half, up 2 and a quarter. May,